Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. As always, I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me, the, I guess, what passes for steady roster of co-hosts, we have Amanda Waltz.
Hi, Brian.
Hello. Nick Newman.
Howdy.
And Danny King.
Danny?
Danny King.
Thank you.
Are you hiding?
Danny's,
hello?
Danny's a little Danny. Shy today, apparently.
Can you hear us, Danny?
Hello?
Oh, yeah. Crap.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Wait, now you're saying, you know, Danny, you're a son of a bitch.
No, it must have been a connection thing.
Okay.
Oh, okay, good.
I was speaking.
Today,
repeatedly.
We will be talking about Xavier Dolan's Tom at the Farm. It's the newest film written and directed by Xavier Dolan. Now, we don't have anything else to talk about.
Oh, I finally saw The Gift.
Oh, did you? Well, maybe
yes.
We'll get your opinions on that. First, we always get waylaid before I can just get even the most basic information about the podcast out. So just let me say, you can email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. You can tweet at us at @filmstageshow, as well as all of our personal Twitter accounts, which we'll give you towards the end. And, of course, you can comment on the pages that these are posted on at thefilmstage.com. Eric Vejnovich, I apologize, Eric, if I said your name wrong. He said, I found a new love, tuned into your cast to hear talk about Phoenix, and never heard such a great film discussion in a podcast. So thank you, Eric.
Aww.
Tell your friends. That doesn't just go for Eric, that goes for everyone. We love getting comments and feedback, and we love getting new listeners. We love using wide-appealing films like Tom at the Farm to do that. I guess, yeah, before we get into that, Amanda, you saw The Gift. What'd you think?
I know that a lot of people had issues with the ending.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in that camp.
Oh, girl.
Which, here's the thing. I was very disappointed, and I think that I was disappointed says something about the film in regards to, like, it did grip me for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, the first half is excellent. It's excellently crafted.
So good.
It's so good.
It's a very good film.
And it just didn't deliver. And not only did it not deliver, but I just didn't feel like it had to resort to that. I mean, just logically, the more my fiance and I were talking about it on the way home, and the more we talked about it, the more I realized, like, he didn't need to do that. Like, there was absolutely no need to do that.
You talking about the character, the director, the writer?
I'm talking about Edgerton as a director.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's... I was about to say, saying Edgerton does not narrow that list down at all.
Yeah. Well, as a director. Yeah. As a writer-director. Yeah, he didn't need to do that. I just thought it was...
I mean...
It was definitely, like, for, like... I think he was going for a little bit of shock at the end, or surprise, but... And I'm gonna spoil it a little bit. Just be warned. I'm gonna spoil this a little bit. But it's like he already ruined his life. He lost his job. His marriage is ruined. I mean, his wife is not gonna come back to him.
Right.
The character. Why did the rape have to come into it, or the possibility of rape have to come into it? I just thought that was very distasteful and completely unnecessary. It just didn't need to. I don't know. It just didn't feel like, and it didn't give me like this moral quandary of, oh man, now I really don't know who's really the bad guy, which I think is what he was going for.
Oh no, I don't think he was going for that at all.
Yeah.
See, I think that's the problem that a lot of people who have this issue with the movie are struggling with, is the fact that, and I guess, yeah, we're just straight up spoiling this.
Sorry, Nick. To be fair, I warned.
Yeah, Nick, did you care?
Did you not see it yet?
This?
That Nick?
I might like to see it at some point, but I don't care. Go.
At the end of this film, Jason Bateman is just the bad guy. He, like, there's no quandary. He's just he is the antagonist that we did not know the entire film.
I don't.
No, there's no other way.
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that because I just don't. Thing. It's not. Big. I think he is trying to set you up for being conflicted about who you really feel more.
No.
Is more of the bad guy, and I'm like, they're both terrible.
No,
they're
it's
both just terrible people.
It's just Bateman is. What are you doing? There's a cat that's climbing into my lap right now. Hello, Bella. That's the microphone. So anyway, I'm going to try to talk around my roommate's cat, who is hanging out with me now. this is thrilling radio. So, do not walk on my keyboard. So, Jason Bateman's the bad guy. He is the bad guy. And when he has his life ruined enough, he can't help but go and ruin it more. And you're not supposed to think that Edgerton's the bad guy by that point. And I think that the wife's reaction to that is your clearest indication, because she is the audience perspective character.
Yeah.
And I'll just say this. The movie 100% tells you that there was no rape.
Well, I think it is still up in the air, because I know that there's that line where he says good things should happen to good people.
Yeah.
That he says to her, which sort of steers you more toward, oh, he never, but he still did things to her and that were not appropriate, and he still spied on them.
Well, he's still a weirdo, but
he's not totally out of the woods.
Right, but you could say that he's the monster of Bateman's own creation.
I get that. I get that he was created through Bateman's actions, but I still don't think that gives him cause to go out, like, do things to the person who had nothing to do with his life turning to shit.
But at the end of the day, like, what has happened? What, this is gonna sound awful, give me a second.
Oh, Brian, you might want to pause for a second.
He has liberated her from a marriage to a lying, deceitful, terrible person. And if you are like me and believe that nothing happened to her beyond him, you know, finding her passed out on the floor and putting her back in bed. Yeah, I mean, obviously it's an intrusion, but the net damage done to her is basically minimal.
Yeah.
It's not like he cut off her fingers. I am of the opinion that his statements...
Oh, well, yeah. I mean,
I'm of the opinion that his statements
he didn't mutilate
obviously
her.
Mean that he
what
did
a,
not do anything to
what
her.
What a saint. Now, it just really bothered me that, and other people have pointed this out in reviews, that she was sort of this playing field, that these two men were exacting their, I don't know, it just didn't.
But I don't think that that's true, because her inherent goodness was her playing back. She refused to play the game that her husband was laying out. She was human to Gordo, who, you know, is not a person who gets treated like a human a lot. And I think that she, through her will and actions, created for herself the scenario that she got to live with, which was much better than the scenario she was in previously.
Yeah, still not buying it.
All right. Well, I wish we had a whole episode to talk about this.
I was going
to
say, we should probably stop talking about this. It just really dropped off for me. Before that, I mean, really well done. I thought there were many moments that there was the moment where she spills the Gatorade and it cuts between that and it spilling onto her feet. I don't know. There were just so many like nice little moments like that were, I don't know. So yeah,
it's a great, great film.
Thank you, Danny.
That's Danny's response. Okay.
Yeah, anyway.
Well, that's it for our talk about The Gift. I guess I'll put a spoiler warning up for that.
Yes, you probably should.
Yeah, definitely gonna do that. That's it. If anyone else has opinions about The Gift and its controversial ending, give us a email, or I was gonna say text us, but please don't do that. Tweet at us at Film Stage Show. Other than that, let's talk about Tom at the Farm, newest film by Xavier Dolan.
Notre ami, notre frère.
Allô?
On peut se dire, ah, il est parti. C'est injuste.
Moi, cet homme, c'est moi, Tom.
On était comparses. Je
savais pas qu'il y avait un frère.
Ton chum, il a menti à sa mère, OK? Mais tu penses-tu qu'il t'a pas menti à toi aussi?
Je savais que tu débarquerais.
So, Nick Newman, we didn't get to hear from you at all during our gift discussion, except for you to say that it was okay for us to discuss it. Why don't you give us your thoughts on Tom at the Farm, which I suppose I should say, since I haven't listened to the trailer and I don't know if it actually gives anyone any concept of what the plot is. This is a story about a young man, Tom, who goes to see the mother of his lover, who has passed away. Mom does not know that her son, Guillaume, was a homosexual. This causes some tension, especially when Guillaume's older brother shows up and begins making demands of Tom. Nick Newman, what'd you think?
Well, I think I should say up front that Xavier Dolan kind of has this weird thing around him because he is this very young writer-director, a very precocious sort, who gained a lot of attention when his first feature, Heartbeats, or sorry, I Killed My Mother, his first feature, was at Cannes in 2009 when he was 19 years old in in the Un Certain Regard category. Okay. And he's been there multiple times since, with his most recent feature, Mommy, actually at one point being something of a favorite to win the Palme d'Or. It ultimately went to Nuri Bilge Ceylan's Winter Sleep. But, you know, he has this quality about him, and because of him being young and in interviews coming off as kind of cocky, people have strong opinions about him. I personally do not, except to say, and I think it might be worth saying this, I do appreciate him because he follows the film stage on Twitter and often retweets our articles.
Does he really?
Well, I guess we should say full disclosure.
Particularly ones about him. And so I really appreciate that because he does give it a lot of attention, and that, you know, that's not nothing. It is nice to kind of have that.
We should pause here. Is he going to listen to this podcast?
Je t'aime, Xavier Dolan.
You know, I've been wondering the same thing, especially since what I'm going to say is not very positive. Uh-oh. So, but you know what? Uh-oh. Let's just move forward.
Do it, Nick.
Okay. Can we? All right. So, are we restarting? Are we back to recording?
We've been recording.
No, but I mean, are we? What we're saying right now is off the record.
Oh,
are
was
we
it?
Back to? I figure. I don't know. You want to keep in? You saying, is he going to listen to this podcast? I don't know.
I'm curious.
Okay.
Anyway, just keep going.
Off the record.
I'll just keep going, and then maybe you can slice and dice this up. So, this is the first film of his I've seen. And with that going in, I kind of didn't. I just never seen his work. It just kind of never happened. But
neither
I'm also.
Have I. Has anyone seen any of his work?
Yeah, I've seen all of his films.
Have you, Danny?
Yeah.
Okay, it's hard to tell with you when you're joking sometimes.
Yeah, no, good. I'm kind of surprised because I didn't realize I had, but I just checked.
Okay, so anyhow, going into this, I wasn't really sure what to expect, but I thought, okay, this seems like it is of interest from what I've read about it, you know, plot-wise and sort of atmosphere and all of that. All of that being said, I did not like this movie very much. Now, my disliking this movie, I think, comes down to, among other things, this problem the film has with establishing a mood and making it seem credible. In that a lot of this movie feels like It feels like a put on, I think. Something about this movie feels inauthentic to me. And I think it comes down to the fact that Dolan is adapting this material, writing it, directing the film, and starring in it. And so there's something I find, personally from my stance, there's something I find inauthentic about him kind of crying a lot and looking very intense and shouting. And Dolan, being a gay filmmaker, you know, taking the brave stance that homophobia is bad. So there's kind of this, there's this quality to the movie of it feeling not easy, but it feels almost like a vanity project, frankly. And I don't really like saying that because I think that, you know, the movie dealing with a major thing such as homophobia and violence against gays and acceptance. All of these things are important, but I don't think the way it's handled here really does the issue many favors, frankly. My problem with it is that there's kind of this quality to the movie of feeling like he is saying what he wants to say, but past that, I just don't know what exactly the pull of this movie is, other than a thriller. And at that, it feels sort of inauthentic. The degree to which he's exploring this and the way he's exploring it, to me, feels mannered. It kind of feels like he is looking at other filmmakers who have done work like this and then applying those principles to it, to this material. But it kind of doesn't really have the right tempo to it. Even the scenes that are supposed to be drawn out and intense feel a bit quick. They don't feel very suspenseful. There's rarely, for me, for some reason, there was rarely any question as to how a scene was going to play out. I'll give you an example. There's a scene in this movie at the guy's funeral when he's in the bathroom stall and the brother comes in and starts intimidating him. Now, it's supposed to be a tense scene, but the problem is, logistically, it doesn't make a lot of sense for him to beat up the guy there and then they just go back to the house. Because there are going to be a bunch of questions about what exactly happened to him if he was beaten up, right? Who did it? Why was it done? Et cetera, et cetera. So during that scene, I'm kind of sitting there and I'm sort of just waiting for the next scene to progress, to begin. And a lot of the sequences kind of had that quality to it. There wasn't much of a sense of danger. And I think this movie needs to feel a bit more dangerous. The only moment when it really kind of felt like that was, I think, a scene where I sort of thought that perhaps Tom, the eponymous Tom at the eponymous farm, had attempted suicide. there is a scene where I thought his character attempted suicide, and I wasn't quite sure exactly what was going on. And that's a moment that kind of came out of left field and felt like a surprise. But otherwise, there's kind of this intensity to it that just doesn't feel authentic. It doesn't really feel like there is a danger or a threat in this movie. And when you have Dolan, who I think, frankly, is a pretty limited actor and a pretty inconsistent one at that, anchoring it, it just kind of nothing sticks. It feels like a series of scenes more than a connected whole. And there is a hyperbole to it as well that I kind of wasn't into. This being best exemplified in a scene with one of Tom's coworkers and the dead man's brother, which I just could not buy for one second. I thought that scene was absurd. And the fact that it's...
The car one? Or?
The one when they're in the kitchen.
Oh, the kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I cannot... I do not know how a person could look at this scene and think that this is something that would actually happen and it would play out in this manner. And because of that, there's just this there's no sense of reality to it.
Well, that's assuming that the movie is going for realism.
Well, yes, but I think when the movie is committed to, you know, long takes, long shots, gritty, you know, atmospheric, elemental scenes, you know, scenes on the farm, scenes in the cornfield, scenes at the church, it gives the impression of wanting to really put you in a guy's headspace and put you in his shoes or something. And then you have this separate scene where he's not even present and all this is going on, and yes, it doesn't feel connected to reality, but I think a lot of the movie is trying to be this very, you know, bracing look at a huge problem. But again, there is this disconnect for me, and so it just doesn't snap together, basically. And that's kind of how I felt about the whole movie. But anyway.
Danny King, what did you think of this film?
Man, a lot of interesting thoughts there.
Sorry, just the way you said it.
Yeah.
You're such a doll.
He's a sweetheart, isn't he? Isn't that what we got called?
I like this movie. What?
Oh, nothing. Go ahead.
Okay. I like this movie. I'll try to provide some context on what I think of his other movies, because it seems like no one else has seen them. But a lot of the adjectives Nick used, it's like some of them would apply to his previous films and some of them wouldn't. Like, I don't think anyone would really call his other films gritty. They're almost like, they have more like music video type segments. Like the score for this movie, which I really like, which often just sounds like the score from Psycho.
It's very totally Hitchcockian.
Different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know, might be like an inauthentic choice, but I just enjoyed it kind of for what it was. But like his other movies are very much like pop heavy soundtracks, a lot of slow motion, very bright colors. And like, the movie I like the least of his is Heartbeats, which is basically just a lot of slow motion and pop songs. And it just sort of gets on your nerves. But this movie I liked because he is working from another guy's material. He's adapting a play, and I like the atmosphere of it. And I think there is a question of like, is he always going for realism? Because there are some moments here where Dolan's character, when he reveals his psychology, you do kind of get a sense of his character being very warped. There was one scene that really struck me where he's talking to this woman coworker who knew the dead brother, and they're talking and she's like, let's just like go, you know, like, let's just leave. This is like a really weird situation. And Dolan's character is like, yeah, but I have to like stay and, you know, help the farm. Like if I leave, the farm will go under. I think that was like a strong acting scene for Dolan, where you really get a sense of like, we've been in this guy's headspace for an hour or so, but it really, in this moment, it's clicking like how gone he is in a certain sense. So I think there are moments where like the brutish brother, his behavior is a little bit more acceptable in that sense. I agree that like the bathroom scene is a little silly. And the kitchen scene, there were just a few lines he had where those are clearly things you should not say to other people if you want them to be your friends. Just very, very horrible things.
Danny King's advice on interpersonal relationships.
I just sort of, compared to his other films, this is just a little bit more fun. And it's interesting that like, Nick, it sort of struck you as like an issue film, which I think it is, I guess. But compared to like some of his other movies, it just seemed a little bit like he was sort of felt a little liberated from his previous style. So I sort of just liked him working in the thriller mode. And there are just some weird touches. I really like the scene. You get this long narrative from a bartender about like this event in the past, and there's kind of like a haunting mythology that's introduced there. So I just sort of like the like random sort of genre touches. I was just a little bit more positive.
All right. Amanda Waltz.
Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie.
All right. So that was Amanda's opinion.
Yeah, I actually have a lot to say about this movie, so bear with me.
You've come to the right place to say it.
I sort of disagree with Nick in that it is, I don't feel that this movie is taking a stance on violence against gays. I don't think that's what it's doing. I actually found this film to be very similar to Stranger by the Lake, in the sense that I think in the subject matter, and
that's interesting.
Yeah, that it also falls kind of in the same camp where it's this thriller, like an erotic thriller, actually, which we don't really see a lot of truly erotic thrillers nowadays, which is something that I actually hit on in the 50 Shades of Grey podcast. But I'll get back to that. But there's this thing, and there's two things I want to say about that, in that. So I feel like a lot of filmmakers who maybe feel pressured to make, when they make a film about gay people, are pressured into only portraying them a certain way, in an idealistic way, or in a way that sort of like appeases audiences, or sort of takes away from this negative image that people have of the homosexual community. And I think a movie like Tom at the Farm and like Stranger by the Lake is a pushback against that, where it's saying, well, you know, I feel like we shouldn't just make movies that portray people, gay people, in a purely positive light. You know, that's not interesting. Like, we want to make interesting films, and we want to tell interesting stories that are also very dark and very disturbing. And, you know, if you can make an erotic thriller with a straight cast that doesn't reflect poorly on the straight community, then why can't you make, you know, an erotic thriller about, you know, gay people? And I think that's what I find very progressive about this film, is that it is just saying, hey, we're going to make whatever fucking movie we want to make about, you know, about gay people. And we're going to, like, I think that's completely fair. And I think that's one thing that I found kind of exciting about this movie and Stranger by the Lake. Stranger by the Lake is very explicit, like very sexually explicit.
Yeah.
Very, very, very much so. This movie, on the other hand, isn't. There's no sex, which just makes it such an interesting erotic thriller, because erotic thrillers are usually very explicit, like Basic Instinct and, you know, Fatal Attraction and movies like that.
Color of Night.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sea of Love. Let's name more erotic thrillers.
What was Sliver? Was that one?
Oh, yeah. But this one, you know, it's not explicitly sexual, but it still has a lot of elements that really make an erotic thriller, in that it's very disturbing and forbidden, but also really fucking hot. That scene of them tango dancing in the barn was incredibly hot. And I will say, I think it rivals the dance scene in Ex Machina as the year's most, like, out of nowhere dance scene.
Yeah, that was one of the many times during this moment I said, what the hell is going on?
Ugh. You know what's funny is that scene, I actually got a phone call. I watched this on a screener that was provided, and I got a phone call during that scene. So I, you know, being a good film viewer, I paused it so I could take the phone call. And at that point, during that scene, I was saying to myself, okay, are we about done here? And then I paused it at that scene. So I was halfway through, and I kind of went, all right, let's just do this. So then anyway,
I'm back to the movie. I was definitely, like, fanning myself a little bit during that
Jesus.
Scene. Yeah. And it is, like, and I think that's what's, you know, obviously, like I said, it's supposed to be disturbing because it is. And it actually reminded me a lot of the criticism surrounding Foxcatcher.
That's sort of an interesting comparison.
Yeah, because, and I remember reading an article by a gay film critic saying that, of course, there is the homoerotic aspect of the relationship between DuPont and the wrestler he took under his wing, which, you know, obviously is probably not true. But, you know, it's a film. Who cares? But it is. Cocaine. What's that?
Both films have cocaine.
Yeah. There's cocaine. But it's more, and then they brought into the fact that it also tackles the idea of rough trade, which I don't know if anyone is familiar with the term rough trade, but it's basically the idea of a man entering a sexual relationship with a much more physically imposing man because of he's sort of excited by the possible risk of something violent or terrible happening to him. It's just this like basically very risky, like threatening relationship.
Definitely seems to apply to the film.
Definitely. Yeah. This is definitely kind of a rough trade type film. And one of the things I kind of felt I thought was interesting was that it made you question whether or not his relationship with Guillaume had been abusive. And this was something that, maybe just ran in the family, that this is something he is attracted to, whether or not it is healthy.
Yeah, and a conversation that he has later on with a coworker definitely lends credence to that idea.
Yeah, and I thought that was interesting because it's almost like a Stockholm syndrome type of... I mean, he, like you said, Danny, he is just completely gone. Not completely, because, you know, what happens in the end, but... and also just from a personal standpoint, this is a pretty bleak but very accurate depiction of farm life. growing up on a farm, cornfields were my ultimate nightmare. They're terrifying all the time, especially...
I've always wanted to run through a cornfield.
They're terrifying. That is why they use them in movies all the time. When I saw... when I was a kid, my sister rented Children of the Corn.
Oh, God.
And I... so I, my house is literally surrounded by cornfields, and I could not sleep at night because I was afraid little Amish kids, like, and, like satanic Amish kids, were going to come out and kidnap
me. This was in downtown Pittsburgh, correct?
Yes. Central PA. But, and also, I think Frank, who is played by Pierre-Yves Cardinal, which is the most French-Canadian name I've ever heard in my life, but... and he's also extremely gorgeous. But he says something at one point in the film about how just bored he is being on this farm and how terrible it is living on this farm. Living on a farm is nothing but shit, dead animals, and boredom. That is basically what living on a farm is. And I think this film like captures that perfectly. It's like, yeah, there's
living
just...
on a farm is nothing but shit, dead animals, and boredom.
That is exactly what living on a dairy farm is.
Put it on a t-shirt.
So I appreciated that aspect of it. I was like, yeah, that was my entire childhood. Just gross, just terrible things happening all the time. But it was, I think stylistically, like Danny said, I loved that Hitchcockian score. I think the film opens on a French version of Windmills of Your Mind, the Dusty Springfield song.
Yeah, I think so.
I absolutely loved. And it ends, the credit sequence has a Rufus Wainwright song, which of course it does. But it's just, oh, and also, I just realized I have a note here. I think the other sort of like erotic thriller aspect of it, there's a lot of things that happen in this movie that are like, even though it's not explicitly sexual, there are little things that happen that make it very like he spits into his mouth, which is a very porn thing to do. Like, that's something that people do in porn.
Just, is it?
Oof. Oh, yeah.
What fucking porn are you watching? Rough Trade?
Hey, I'm a film critic. I have to, you know, watch
that's...
That's
a real good recovery there.
Oh, Christ. Anyway.
Sorry.
But yeah, it is a very like porn thing to do, is like spit in someone's mouth, which I was kind of like, ooh, that is. Yeah. All
certainly
right.
Certainly a sexual act.
Yeah, but it's not. It's just, and just like the little things like that, where it is this character who is so macho and so... obviously, you know, you're not really sure if he actually does want to have a sexual relationship with Tom. I'm talking about Frank. But it is, you know, he just does these things where it's like he's not quite doing, like, he's not quite committing the act, but it's just like, it still has like this strange, like, aggressive sense of intimacy that I found really, like, compelling. I just really like this film. And stylistically, too, it was like, I loved how it opened with how it was like just swathed in a constant dreamlike fog. It was just so, I just thought that was like so amazing looking. And there's just, you know, I love the way it was shot. There's that scene, like you mentioned the scene in the bar, Danny, and he's lit from, because there's that huge neon sign behind the bar. Mm-hmm. And Tom's face is lit by that neon sign, and it just looks like The Shining.
And
So I feel like there were like little moments like that. There was also like stock sounds of animals howling and owls, which just sounded like it would be from a, like a Universal monster movie. So there are all these like horror, like you said, like genre elements that I really enjoyed. I don't know. I just love this film.
Okay.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this film. Yeah, that's it.
Wow.
No, I mean, I guess I'm still wrestling with it in a way. I started off a little bit like Nick, where I was just, you know, kind of like, is this still going on? I feel like we got it. But then stuff kept happening. And the more stuff that kept happening, and the more I couldn't understand what the hell was going on with the main character of Tom, I kind of became more engrossed. And the more out of control things got, the more into it I became. Because I sort of believed that this was just going to be your average, you know, three people sitting in a room, you know, two of them have a secret, blah, blah, blah. But it kept expanding beyond that. And the more strange it became and the more disconnected from reality it became, the more I found myself interested in it. To the point where I'd love to go back and watch it again to see what I was seeing in a clearer light. I agree that, you know, the film has this kind of very erotic energy to it, but I can't quite figure out how or why or what's going on. And I think that there's an interesting idea at the center of this film that's more to do with the way that we treat the dead than I think we've really talked about. The fact that a great deal of the tension in this movie comes from trying to keep the mother of Guillaume, the departed, from finding out more about her son and the truth behind him was what really latched me in. Because when someone dies, their active intentions to keep their secrets fails them. And all of the evidence that they could expertly be able to explain away or skirt around or hide is suddenly just wherever they last dropped it, waiting to be found. And so seeing the way that Tom responds at first, and then the way that the brother, Francis, responds, and kind of learning throughout the course of the film that the mother is kind of the impeding element in everything was really fascinating for me. I enjoyed watching Tom sort of begin to subsume his reality and give himself over to this strange world, either through, I don't even know what the hell was happening. Like it makes me more interested to know what his relationship with Guillaume was, because maybe he just loved Guillaume so much that he didn't want to, you know, hurt his family, or maybe Guillaume was an abusive, terrible person that had broken his will so much that it was easy for his brother to step into that role, acting as kind of the hand of his mother. And it was bizarre, very bizarre to watch. I think towards the end, I maybe grew out of that a little bit, just because there was some pretty overt symbolism that I don't know that I fully understood the need for. So that's interesting. But in all, I found it very strange to see this man kind of give himself over to something that might have been even less real than the lie that he was living with previously that we learned. And I thought that the direction was good. I found Tom to be well acted by Xavier Dolan. Sure, he's a little shaky in some parts, but I think a lot of that could be chalked up to character, because the situation is madness. And I don't think there's a naturalistic way to act it out, unless he just got in his car and left. But the fact that he keeps staying there, it becomes less and less easy to say a person wouldn't act this way. Because once a person does one thing that a normal person wouldn't do and puts themselves off the plane of reality, it becomes almost impossible to begin questioning their human motivation.
Well, and he's so isolated, too. And I mean, it's like, I have a note here that says, like, your voiture is done, son, because he puts his car up on blocks.
Yeah.
so we can't even leave.
Which is amazing.
And also, oh man, but like when he and I like what you said about Delon's performance, you know, Cardinal is really intense.
Oh, I loved him in this.
He was amazing. And I think for you have to be a little simpering when you are, you know, when you are sort of paired up with someone like that.
The thing that I loved most about the two of them together was that it was so antagonistic, but anytime they were alone and able to kind of breathe and they weren't under the strictures of what was supposed to be going on, they became friends. And then one bad thing would happen, usually brought on by the knowledge of or actual interference of the mother. It would just cut to Tom having the shit knocked out of him and having to readjust once again. It was very strange, and it brings up a theme of kind of the way that slavish devotion to, you know, previous generations' mores or sympathies can keep people from progressing. Which I found to be very interesting in this film, because I wasn't expecting it to go there. Now, again, there's some symbolism towards the end, which kind of like put too much of a exclamation point on it, and maybe brought it to a very strange cultural place that I don't know.
Yeah, I'd be curious what you thought of the ending.
Yeah. So that's my thoughts on the movie as a whole. I definitely recommend that people go out and check it out. Because it is the type of movie that makes you literally say out loud, what the fuck is going on? And I love movies that make me say that. This movie at times reminded me, not at all in plot, but more like feeling and detail of the movie Enemy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like Enemy a whole lot more, and I think it's more cohesive and interesting.
You think Enemy is more cohesive?
Look, man, wow. I could talk for 4 hours about Enemy. One time Jordan asked me if I wanted to write an article explaining Enemy, and I tried, but I was like 4,000 words that sounded like the rantings of a lunatic. I was like, I'm not going to ever publish this because I will be committed. But yeah, I enjoyed Enemy. I thought that this had a lot of that similar feeling. The music, the uncertainty, the character who asserts some individuality and agency but is very easily knocked off balance, and I enjoyed the hell out of this film.
Yeah,
it's funny how there are now mentions of two movies I like a whole lot more than this, Enemy being one and another being Stranger by the Lake, the latter of which was actually number like 5 on my top 10 list of last year. I think Stranger by the Lake is kind of a masterpiece. Actually.
And Enemy was my number 1, wasn't it?
I think it was.
Yeah.
So it's funny how these are coming up, and I just, I don't know. I mean, just Stranger by the Lake's on Netflix. Watch that, man. I'm not talking to you directly. I'm just saying the general man,
the royal man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that, I don't know. It's
be warned. There's a lot of peens. Lot of peens.
You should be able to handle it.
Oh, I can handle it.
Not you.
Jesus.
I mean, again, the royal you. You
Amanda,
know, I'm speaking.
Again, what kind of porn are you watching?
Speaking broadly here.
One thing about Tom at the Farm, because I also watched it on the Vimeo link, so I don't know if there's something weird with that, but it seemed like the aspect ratio changed. And
yeah,
like
it did.
A couple. Okay.
Yeah.
I just.
Oh, did it? Oh, yeah.
It shrunk down every once in a while.
Yeah. I think that was on purpose.
I believe.
Oh, I'm sure it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, Mommy. I know Mommy was shot in like 1:1. It's just interesting because Tom at the Farm feels like Delon's attempt to maybe make something a bit more commercially appealing, and yet. It's coming out now 2 years after it premiered at Venice. So it's just interesting that in interviews, he just seems kind of confused, where he was like, yeah, I figured I'd, you know, make this gay thriller set on a farm, and it would, you know, sound a bit more appealing, and it hasn't come out for 2 years.
Which is funny, so because I haven't seen Lawrence Anyways, but I've watched clips of it, and I've seen the trailers for it, and yeah. I feel like that looks pretty mainstream.
Yeah, but that film is like, it's like 160 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, it just, I guess if you just like put the two on paper, like 160 minute movie about like a trans sort of character study versus like a 100 minute farm gay thriller, like that one seems a little bit more, I don't know. Maybe not.
That's basically my perfect movie. It's like a farm gay thriller. Yes.
One of the finest genres we have.
Please give this to me.
Good lord.
Oh.
All right. Well, do we want to jump quickly into spoilers so we can talk about the ending and a little more about maybe thematic completion?
Yeah.
Well, Jesus, if you don't want to, we don't have to.
No, I just.
Brian to explain the final scene.
Yeah, Brian, say 4,000 words explaining the final scene of Tom at the Farm.
Okay, spoilers for Tom at the Farm. First of all, we find out that the older brother ripped a man's mouth open from ear to throat.
Like, very, very, like, Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I'm just going to go on a rant for a bit. So what it seems to me to be saying is that the older brother is cool with his brother being gay. He might even have some homosexual leanings himself. And the problem arises when you try to bring this out into the open. He has an issue with coming face to face with this. He'd rather let it be something that's subtle and unspoken, and that doesn't infringe upon the very traditional life that has been held, which is why, you know, he'll do a tango with his dead brother's lover. But the second the mom comes in and says she made apple pie, he will then beat the shit out of the lover. And not only that, but he'll have no problem with his brother dancing with someone in a bar up until the point where that man that he's dancing with tries to say, you know, your brother is a homosexual, in which case he'll rip his goddamn mouth open. And this is all because, again, he's trying not to harm the feelings or ideas that his mother holds, because obviously he has what might be considered respect for his mom, or he's just afraid of her. And there's a point where he even says, you know, she'll die out someday. I really wish that she would just go now. Which is kind of this thing that you hear a lot where people say that, like, homophobia and racism will one day just die out because older generations will die. So what you have is the progressive younger generation who are completely fine with being gay and being out and open. You have the slightly older generation who is cool with it, but just don't make it a thing, bro. And then you have the older generation that is completely unhinged and unable to handle the concept of it. And so you're unfortunately going to be a slave to them so long as you give them the amount of respect that's required for you to actually care what they say. Where it becomes strange for me is Tom being able to be subjugated through violence into being cool with that. And I guess maybe he just doesn't believe people about how bad Francis can be up until the point that he finally sees this person with the stitches and the scarring on the mouth at a gas station that he goes to. And he finally makes the decision to get the hell out. You know, he has this kind of last moment where he's like, maybe I should go back. But then he sees the violence and he understands the lasting impact of that and he leaves. Now, the real issue that I have with this, because otherwise that's kind of an interesting idea and theme to be explored in this basically three to four person character piece, is that the brother towards the end, when he's chasing Tom into the woods and saying, like, you know, I know that I ripped up that homosexual, but I'm never going to do that to you because I actually like you, is that he's wearing a shirt that just says USA on it.
Oh yeah.
And has an American flag. And the final song in the movie is a Rufus Wainwright song I think it's what is it? Going to a Town. And the song,
those end credits are the worst.
The song, yeah. I watched the entirety of the end credits, and it's Tom.
Oh, I did too. Yeah.
Tom driving back to the city and seeing all these people, and he's listening to "Going to a Town" that's playing, and it's just like the lyrics of it. Again, are very, you know, I'm so tired of America. I'm so tired of you, America. I've got to lead my life, America. I mean, it's like you just said all of this great universal humanist stuff, but the second that it becomes like a full-fledged escape the maniac thriller, and you just like you turn it into I guess anti-US? Like, are we the most homophobic country? Like, was this like I don't understand that, because it took what was a pretty universal like idea,
yeah,
and then you kind of like exculpate your own culture from it, almost like America's like a toxic presence in the world allowing this to happen. And I mean, like, the mom made apple pie, for Christ's sake.
That's No, I see where you're.
So there's questions there that I have about things like that. Because why the fuck else would a French Canadian guy, be wearing a jacket that just says USA on it?
Yeah, and it does kind of come out of nowhere. Because, like I said, before that, we hear it opens with a French version of a song from a gay icon. It is very strange, and right. I don't really know what, I guess because I don't know, maybe it has something to do with growing conservatism. I don't know.
It's really hard to tell. And you know, the brother Francis says, like, I need you, you know, don't leave me here alone, I need you, I'd never do that to you. But I guess I don't understand at that point what the movie's trying to say. Maybe, like, you know, that people, like, gay conservative apologists are just as much the enemy as the people who are outright hateful towards the homosexual community.
Mm.
So it's interesting, and it's fun mulling it over in my head, but again, there's just something weird about the kind of way that it turns towards this. Oh, if I throw a bunch of American imagery in there, it'll insulate, you know, this culture, this community from this. And suddenly it becomes all about the problems inherent in America, which kind of allows other people who might benefit from this idea to, like, you know, wash their hands of it, Pontius Pilate style.
Mm.
Which seems a little... It just seems a little disingenuous.
Yeah, to be honest, I never even thought about that.
That's why I'm
so here. I actually kind of appreciate that reading of it.
This is why I'm the goddamn host, Amanda.
It really does come out of nowhere, though. You're right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it wasn't thinking about it. I mean, considering that, it's still not really enough to take away from my enjoyment of it.
Right.
I can sort of dismiss it a little bit. Yeah,
bury
it's
your
a
head
tough,
in the sand, Amanda.
It's a tough.
Sleep.
It's a tough world here in America. You know. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah. No, that's a yeah. I never would have even thought of that.
Did anyone else have any other readings of the ending? Okay.
No, it's just, you know, we're interesting.
All right. Well, anyone else have anything to say before we end this review? Cool. So,
Nicholas, are you?
Another episode of Brian talks for 15 minutes about the ending, and everyone just sort of acquiesces. Let's very briefly go over what's coming out on Blu-ray, and then we can get out of here. So, coming to Blu-ray, 2 days, one night. Which is a movie that we talked about, which I enjoyed greatly. That stars Marion Cotillard. It's by the Dardenne brothers. We also have Aloha coming to Blu-ray. Did anyone ever see this?
Danny, weren't you excited?
I enjoyed it.
Wait, yeah, I enjoyed it. Were you being serious about that? I thought that was a joke.
No, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Okay.
Danny the Sweetheart, everybody.
I would buy it.
Well, that's good.
Oh, man.
Great. We also have Citizen 4, which is something I did not see. And we have Big Game, which is a bit of a surprise. I would have thought this movie would have gotten at least like a token theatrical release.
Was that the Samuel Jackson action thriller? Yeah.
Samuel Jackson is a president whose plane gets shot down in the mountains. I think it's in Finland. And there's a 13-year-old boy who is out there hunting as part of like a manhood ceremony for his father and, you know, other people. And the boy's kind of what's a good way to say this? A gentle soul, and he becomes the only person who can save the president. It's a big, dumb, fun action movie. It kind of reminds me of like 80s Goonies sorta
stuff.
It's a lot of humor, a lot of like, you know, scenery chewing villains and stuff. I saw it at Toronto as part of their Midnight Madness selections. I thought it was fun. I thought this would have gotten, you know, like an early, you know, late spring, early summer, or late summer. Like, right now would be the perfect time to release this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't, for some reason. I don't understand why that is, but I'm sure it'll get a cult following. It's a good film. It's worth checking out.
Yeah, okay.
Might also be worth pointing out that another movie coming to Blu-ray is Abel Ferrara's Welcome to New York, starring Gerard Depardieu, which I know Danny really loves. However, I have every reason to believe that this is the cut version that IFC released. That compelled Abel Ferrara to tell somebody to burn down the IFC Center. So he's also said that if you want to watch the movie, you should just download the international version of it because he doesn't want you to support IFC. So basically, I have not seen Welcome to New York yet, but if I'm going to watch it, I am not going to watch that version. Maybe just consider this a reminder that movie is out there.
Oh, man.
Just, you know, and while you're at it, you know, burn down the IFC Center too.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's a great film.
All right. Well, that's it for today. There's a Nicolas Cage movie called Runner.
Yeah, I want to see that.
That's funny. Anyway, that's it for today. Next week, I'm not sure what we'll be talking about. It might be Queen of the Earth.
Definite article.
Queen of Earth.
Queen of Earth. God damn it. I swear to God, I'm not doing this on purpose every time I do it. So Queen of Earth, the newest film by ARP.
Your best friend.
My boy, Alex Ross Perry.
I interviewed him on Friday, and you can find that on the site by the time this
episode posts. Did you talk to him about me? Did he bring
you
up?
No, I didn't.
He's like, you work for that website that has that podcast where that guy's always a dick about me.
Was he like, why doesn't Brian like me? How can I get him to like me?
I would love to interview him. I'm not even, and I wouldn't be a jerk about it. I would just ask like a bunch of really pointed questions. Just like, why don't I get you?
I'm sure he would love to have that conversation too.
Well, maybe after Queen of Earth, we can try to set something up.
Will be the one where you get him.
I really want to.
It could happen. This one's a little different.
Again, I don't think he's a bad filmmaker. I just don't like anything he does.
You just seem to believe he's a bad person.
Well, it's like
maybe with the three name thing.
It's like if I go to, it's possibly the three names. No, it's just like, you know, Jiro Dreams of Sushi. Like, you know, if I went to that place, it could be the best sushi ever. And I've seen the movie about him, and I know that he puts a lot of time and effort into it, and he's probably a master craftsman. I just don't like sushi that much. So I'm going to eat it, and I'm still not going to like it, and it's going to make
like
me
sushi?
Feel weird. I don't like sushi.
Wow, that is... Wow. Of all the disagreements we've had, this might be the most profound.
Controversy.
Well... Wow.
I had sushi for dinner. By for dinner, I mean I scarfed it down on the kitchen counter before recording this. But anyway.
Well, that's a step in the right direction, because usually it's while we're recording.
It was a crab roll.
Ooh.
Oh,
yeah, it was good.
Sounds pretty good.
And that's the thing. Like, I always look at a piece of sushi, I'm like, that looks delicious. And then it's like, it's not.
Are we talking about rolls? Are we talking about when you put the fish over
like a little
the rice?
Bit of rice? It's both.
Oh, this is so good.
Guys, wow. I just don't like sushi.
Do you like fish?
Some fish.
Have you ever
that's
seen
your
an
problem now. So you gotta really like seafood to like sushi.
Yeah, and I think that's the issue. And maybe you really gotta like shoegazing hipster bullshit to really like Alex Ross Perry films. I don't know.
I don't know if I would say he's shoegazing.
But look, we'll talk about it when we talk about Queen of Earth. I have given him a lot of attention. I'm looking forward to seeing Queen of Earth. I would like to be able to finally like snap into place, or just even better articulate why I don't like him. So hopefully one way or the other something like that happens this time. The other thing that I'm going to try to talk these roustabouts into doing is talking about the HBO miniseries Show Me a Hero, because there's not a lot of good stuff coming to theaters, so maybe that can fill a gap somewhere. So ladies and gentlemen, keep an eye out. We'll figure out what we're going to talk about at some point.
We might talk about Show Me Oscar Isaac's Mustache. We might talk about that show.
I was about to say, I'm surprised you're not more excited. Oscar Isaac's in it.
He doesn't look that good in it. not acting-wise, just, you know.
Okay.
I will watch it. Okay. I'm not that superficial.
Good. You know the movie Z for Zachariah is coming out this weekend?
Oh, yeah. The
play.
Yeah.
Just hate that title.
Yeah,
it's a really bad title.
It's the fact that the Zachariah with an H at the end.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. But it's got Margot Robbie.
Zachariah not
Chiwetel
supposed to have an
Ejiofor.
H at the end?
It's got a good cast, but I mean, that's not enough, man.
Anyway.
None of those actors are watch whatever they're in actors.
I would say Chiwetel Ejiofor is.
Yeah.
I've liked him since, what is it? Firefly? Serenity?
Red Belt?
Red Belt was great.
Wait, yep. He was in that?
Red Belt?
Well, he was in Firefly?
He was in Serenity. He was the operative.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
All
right. I didn't
know
that.
Nick, I thought you liked Red Belt.
No, I like Red Belt very much.
Okay.
I'm just saying it. I literally just said the title as a thing. Because I think that was the first thing I saw him in.
Children of Men, also very good.
Yes.
Mm.
Inside Man, he was in that. Kinky Boots, he played Lola.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, welcome to Chiwetel Ejiofor Cast. Anyway, guys, let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found. Amanda Waltz.
You can find me on Twitter at MediaWaltz, also at MediaWaltz on Letterboxd, and you can also find my blog, Steel Cinema, on WordPress.
Nick Newman.
You can find me having very strong militant positions either for or against the new Carly Rae Jepsen album at twitter.com/Nick_Newman. I have not listened to it yet, so I can't say what it'll be. You can find my writing on thefilmstage.com, and you can email me at chadvelcoro@gmail.com.
Wait, we can find your Carly Rae Jepsen review on the film stage?
Twitter.com/Nick_Newman. I will be tweeting missives about it
as soon as I
listen to it. I have no plans to listen to it at the moment, but when I do, it's going to be hellfire in some direction.
I am so very much looking forward to this. Danny King, what about yourself?
Twitter at the King Bulletin, and you know, trying to move along.
Cool. I can be found on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. Similarly, you can see the star ratings I've given to the 103 films that I've seen in 2015 on Letterboxd. And you can find me at the Film Stage and my personal site, dearfilm.net, which has not had a new review written up on it in months, so I apologize. That's it for today. Tune in next week. We'll be talking about something, probably. Thank you again, ladies and gentlemen. Have a great day. So, do not walk on my keyboard. Do not walk on my keyboard.
Okay, dude, you gotta...
I gotta do something about this. Okay, so what I was saying is that... Okay, I'm gonna lift the cat up. Oh god, she's under the microphone cord. There's no... There.
Oh my
Please
god.
Just walk that way. Please just walk that way. Okay.
We have the cat.
Okay.
Let's just have a cat. Come on, Bella.
Jeez.
now I have to make the command decision of whether or not to leave that in.